Welcome, my name is Kevin Gianni, host and creator of The Rockathon, which can be found at www.rockathon.com. That's RAWKATHON.com. I'm going to be your host for this incredible Rockathon interview. Each one of these interviews is special to me because I feel the experts and I really broke down the impersonal walls of being on stage or in public, and we got to their true essence. I can promise that the content you find in these talks are not what you'll find anywhere else, unless you actually sat down with the experts themselves, one-on-one, and asked them your questions. So please grab a pen and piece of paper, get a filtered glass of water, and be prepared to experience the Rockathon firsthand. Please enjoy the show. Dr. Jamie Sheridan, I want to welcome you to this program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's first start with a little introduction about yourself for those people who don't know who you are.
I'm the co-author of Uncooking with Jamethan Kim, published in 1991, brought the flax crackers and some other things to the raw foods community. Also the co-founder and formulator for Health Force Nutritionals. The company makes biocompatible nutritional superfoods.
Yeah, great. Let's first start with raw foods because, hey, it's pretty appropriate for this program. Mm-hmm. Why raw foods for you?
To me, I originally got into raw foods for health because I wanted to be as healthy as I possibly could. I started out being a whole foods vegan, being very athletic prior. And raw foods has had tremendous benefit for me personally in my health. However, there's some concerns about raw foods that when people go from a regular conventional diet to a raw food diet, it can be counterproductive in many cases because they go from Kentucky Fried Chicken and regular pizza and hamburgers and regular junk food into a raw food diet. And usually someone doesn't go cold turkey forever. They fall back. They do the best they can. You go back and forth. When they go back and forth, they're eating, and when they binge, they'll be eating cookie dough and Kentucky Fried Chicken and animal products and other things that are absolutely horrible for you. And I see that happen more often than people staying on 100% raw.
So explain that in terms of like default and like, is the animal products, it's like if you don't develop that, right, then you go back to your default, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it goes on a misconception that a raw food diet, that the benefit of a raw food diet, the single benefit of a raw food diet, and this is what is taught by virtually all raw food teachers, is the fact that it is raw. And that is a major misconception, and people get into trouble with that. When you go on a raw food diet, you don't go from cooked Twinkies to raw Twinkies. You don't go from cooked milk to raw milk. You don't go from a cooked piece of animal flesh to a raw piece of animal flesh. That's not the only factor that's changing. It's one of the many. A raw food diet, immediately, you are a vegan. Right away, you're a vegan. And just by becoming a vegan, you can lower your chances of heart disease, of cancer, of arthritis, of osteoporosis, of kidney disease, of so many other challenges just alone by becoming a vegan. But in raw foods, there's two categories of food, raw or cooked, nothing in between. So it doesn't really matter. Hmm. If it's either cookie dough or a vegan bran muffin, it's in the same category. It's just as bad for you in the raw mentality.
In the mentality, right.
Yes.
Okay.
So becoming a raw fooder, all of a sudden you're a vegan. That's a huge, immense increase in your health. You also, almost all raw fooders are focused on eating organic foods, which is another huge benefit to your health. You also become a whole fooder versus a raw fooder. For example, you can go on a vegan diet and eat white sugar, white flour, and hydrogenated oil and be sick. Be sick, look sick, feel sick. Or you can do things like all whole foods, like grains as they come out of the stalk, potatoes, other tubers, fruits and vegetables, even if you're cooking them. It's all whole foods. And when you're a raw fooder, for the most part, everything you're eating is a whole food. You become a whole fooder. That is a huge benefit to health. You also tend to eat a different class of foods now. It's not just that you're a whole fooder and a vegan. You're now eating a large percentage of fruits and vegetables. And even if you do that cooked, your health is immensely increased. That's another benefit when you become a raw fooder that tends to be automatic. Also, when you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables that are high water content foods, you're getting much better hydration in your cells. Just hydration alone is an incredible asset to your health. You're also having more chlorophyll when you're a raw fooder, which is also beneficial. There's so many levels that automatically happen when you become a raw fooder. However, people don't usually recognize that. They just recognize I'm raw versus I'm cooked. Now, I was a whole food, health-conscious vegan before I got into raw foods. So if in the early days when I was experimenting with what worked and so forth, when I, quote, fell off the wagon, or if I was eating too much fruit or other things and I needed to go back to something, well, I would go back to things like brown rice or quinoa or sprouted steamed legumes or a baked potato or steamed vegetables. And you just really can't get into trouble with steamed vegetables. And many raw fooders will say, you know, I'm having steamed vegetables, I'm cooking something, I'm evil, I'm wrong, I've fallen off the wagon, I'm a loser, I might as well just go ahead and, you know, have a burger. I'll just go to Burger King or McDonald's because it's all cooked anyway. It's all poison. It's all crap.
Yeah.
And that dramatic, you know, difference is not healthy.
It creates neurosis.
It creates neurosis, and it creates the all raw neurosis. And it's like when I first I was 100% raw for 3 years. I'm not 100% raw right now. Mm-hmm. I've been for quite some time, but I'm mostly, depending on the seasons. The first couple months that I was 100% raw, I was doing a lot of athletics. So I was determined to stay raw at all costs, no matter what. So for the first month, it worked beautifully. I trimmed down a little bit, got a little more ripped, got some more veins, which guys really, you know, really like. Yeah. It's like I'm ripped to shreds and stuff. But then I was doing a lot of athletics, a lot of distance running and weightlifting. I only had a part-time job at that point, so I could spend a lot of time on athletics. I was burning so many calories that I had to eat a huge amount of food per day. And to stay raw, I needed to make it, because I was starting to get really, really hungry and too thin. So I started eating a lot of dried fruit because I could not eat enough fresh fruit during the day, caloric-wise, to maintain my caloric needs. And that wasn't enough, and I couldn't just eat dried fruit because it starts to feel too sugary. Mm-hmm. And so I started eating nuts and seeds. And I started eating a pretty good quantity of nuts and seeds. And what I noticed is that by doing that, my teeth started to rot out. I started to have bladder infections from the quantity of fruit. And also, I started to break out. Excess oils of any nature tend to make a lot of people break out, and I'm included in that group. Now, oils, the oils that I was having in the form of the nuts and the seeds were healthy oils, but for acne and breakout, my skin could care less whether it was toxic or not. Other parts of my body did care. And I started to actually gain weight. I started to get a little heavy again. And with eating all these nuts and seeds. And then I found myself, you know, I don't really feel like running or lifting today. I don't really feel like exercising. I got kind of fat and docile because I was determined to stay raw.
Right.
And when I went on these really long runs, and I actually did a 33-mile run that particular summer, just preparing for a marathon and some other things, and I would crave complex carbohydrates. I would salivate at the thought of having something like a baked potato or quinoa, because I needed those complex carbohydrates to fill my glycogen back up. And I was able to do it raw, but I did crave those things. And if I had just had a little bit of a baked potato or a little bit of quinoa, I would not have had, you know, 100 pounds of nuts. Just a little bit. It's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But I did. I stayed raw.
Mm-hmm.
To my detriment.
Right.
I could have stayed mostly raw, but the all, because I was in that mentality that if it was raw, it was law, it was the best, period. And that was the main factor, even though I had been a whole food, health conscious vegan. But I also knew that when I was eating that much fat and sugar from raw, coming off of a whole food vegan program, I thought, you know, I felt better on my, you know, 40-50% raw whole food vegan program than I do on this version of a raw diet.
Yeah. You mentioned teeth issues.
Yes.
We really haven't talked about teeth issues in anyone from this program. And some people do experience hot and cold sensitivity. And is that the sign of teeth starting to rot? Or what's happening there?
Yes, it can be. And many a raw fooder has had dental problems. It's actually the group that has the most dental problems in my experience, and especially in the years past, because there's more awareness of that, has been raw fooders, which is ironic. The worst dental health I've seen is in raw fooders.
Wow.
Now, when I was mostly a fruitarian, I had a few cavities when I was a kid, I think four, and when I was mostly fruitarian, my teeth started rotting out of my mouth.
Wow.
I've got many, many cavities, and that was during that similar time of athletics when I was eating so much sugar. Now, someone would say, well, I'm eating this raw food, vital, healthy, magnificent fruit, and I am not at all an anti-fruit person, but by no means do I recommend fruitarianism either.
Right.
I was eating more sugar than I was when I was a regular junk food kid at Halloween and so forth. When you eat a regular person, if they eat junk foods and sugars, they'll have a candy bar here, there, maybe once a day, something like that, maybe twice a day. So two times a day you have sugar passing by your teeth. When you're a raw fooder and eating lots of fruit, you are having sugar pass by your teeth a dozen times a day. I'll have a piece of fruit now, have a piece of fruit later. And fruit's so low calorie, you actually have more contact time with sugar on your teeth. And it's ironic that a regular candy bar has a very limited ability to feed your cells because it's white sugar, it's preservatives, there's very little nutrients in it, it's just absolute crap, and you cannot sustain cellular life very well whatsoever. Now, the bacteria that live under your gums, when they get a candy bar, they can grow from that, but they can't grow nearly as well as they can from fruit sugar. Because fruit sugar is live, it's vital, it has enzymes, it has life force. The water in fruits and vegetables is a low surface tension structured water, which feeds our cells phenomenally better than a candy bar. That's one of the reasons raw foods and whole foods are so good for us. Bacteria under your teeth thrive on fruit sugar like nothing else because it's more vital for them too, and they get stronger.
Vital for us and them.
And they grow like crazy because it's a better source of food for them, and they're getting it constantly. So you're more likely actually to have dental problems if you're eating lots of fruit versus if you're eating a lesser quantity of refined processed foods.
Right.
Not that I'm recommending that.
Right.
Now, dates, for example, for your gums are the worst of all possible worlds because dates are vital, they're live, but they're also gooey, so they stick on your teeth.
Right.
Dates and dried fruits would apply to that. And the answer to that is don't eat that much fruit because there's another component I want to talk about in a minute. And also make sure your dental hygiene is supreme. Because dental health and just having things go wrong with your teeth is clearly associated with having things go wrong with other organs and systems in the body stemming from the teeth as a source. You don't want to have rotten teeth in your mouth. You've got to get that addressed. And because I've had some serious dental issues in the past coming from largely fruitarian diets, I floss twice a day, brush twice a day. I floss sometimes more than twice a day. I never let anything get stuck in my teeth. Mm-hmm. And I have a healthy essential oil type mouthwash that I usually use and rinse after I have things with sugar or other things. Okay. And that's prevented any further dental decay.
Really? And what kind of mouthwash is it?
Right now I tend to use one from EcoDent. It's just an organic essential oil based mouthwash. Something healthy without a sodium lauryl sulfate or any preservatives. There's, mm-hmm. there's other ones out there, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that happens with people when they eat a lot of fruit is high in antioxidants, it's high in vitamins, it's high in a lot of magnificent things. And actually, I think that people that say they eat no fruit, they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I don't think that's healthy, and we can talk about more about that later. But fruit is extremely low in minerals. That's just not what fruit contributes to your body, to your diet. That's not what it's there for. It just genetically can't have a lot of minerals in it. 2 and 3%, sometimes 4%. Whereas the average vegetable might have 10%, the average superfood vegetable like nettles has about 20% minerals. Mm-hmm. Dramatically different. Even spirulina has about 10% minerals. Fruit is just really low. When you have that much sugar and that little minerals, it actually starts to demineralize your teeth and your bones. And sometimes people's teeth can become sensitive just from that alone, and they can start to become transparent too.
Okay.
And that's not a healthy situation to have.
Okay.
I've actually never met a long-term fruitarian who was healthy or who didn't cheat.
Okay.
That's my experience after 22 years of being in raw. I've never seen that. And there's some famous fruitarian emphasis types speaking today who aren't telling people everything they do.
Right.
I see B12 being rampant in people who are fruitarian. If someone is a fruitarian, I'd recommend they don't be, but if they are, they've absolutely got to take a B12 supplement. I've seen so many fruitarians be B12 deficient, and then I've talked to a few of them and said, listen, let's get you on some superfoods with probiotics and grasses and spirulina is another thing, combinations of which have been proven to raise people's B12 levels without taking a B12 supplement.
Right.
And what I've almost invariably heard from them is, hey, that's a little bit outside of my box. I don't think that's really natural. I don't think I can do that. But they go ahead and take a supplement or take injectable B12. I'm thinking, that isn't outside your box? That's not unnatural?
Yeah.
But it's this philosophy. Now, there have been a few fruitarian types who have taken me up on my offer to help them with superfoods become B12 deficient, and blood tests have shown they have become B12 sufficient by taking various superfood complexes.
Really?
But I think it's important.
Plant-based or no?
Completely plant-based. And these are some products.
With probiotics.
With probiotics in them. Now, I don't know, is it the spirulina or the chlorella or some of the other things in this superfood that I'm talking about? Or is it the probiotics in there? Because probiotics make B12 on their own.
Yeah.
Or is it the combination of all of them? Because I haven't dissected the 30 different ingredients and just given it to someone in a clinical trial. But I know the totality of it does it. B12 is somewhat of an important issue because it can just ruin someone's health. Everything else in their health can be great, and if their B12 is deficient, they start to get weak, they can start to get numbness and tingling, they can start to have brain and mental disorders. And approximately 40% of the average human population in America, 40% of the average Americans are B12 deficient on a meat-eating diet, on a carnivorous diet. This is not a vegan or a raw issue. If you're a fruitarian, it definitely is magnified tremendously. So if someone has to take a B12 supplement, it doesn't mean that their life or their lifestyle is failing. It just means that they're taking care of their needs. They're doing what they need to be healthy. And the reason that I got into raw, and the reason that pretty much everybody gets into raw, is to be healthy. So if something's not healthy, then you shouldn't do it. And getting stuck in the philosophy or the various philosophies of raw can get people into trouble. I don't take a B12 supplement, and I've been a vegan for 22 years. I take my B12 levels, and they're optimum. But if they weren't, I think it's because I take superfoods and probiotics. If they weren't, I would have no problem taking a B12 supplement. And it's like when you're a vegan also, you're on trial with a lot of the rest of the world. You're skinny. You're this. You have this problem. Therefore, you're vegan. It's like, oh, you broke your arm because somebody hit it with a sledgehammer. That's because you're vegan.
Yeah.
You can't lift 1,000 pounds. That's because you're vegan.
Yeah.
You're B12 deficient. That's because you're vegan. Either take the superfoods, get a test, and you can get a test actually at B12.com, someone's website. They send you a little vial, random urine in it, send it back, they tell you how you're doing. Either take the superfoods, take the B12 supplement, and just shut everybody up. They have nothing to talk about anymore.
Yeah. Though you're a vegan, you're 22 years, you're in good shape.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. So let's see, let's move into, there's a bunch of superfoods and a bunch of stuff I want to talk about. When we were in the car on the way over here, we started talking about chocolate.
Yes.
And cacao. And so I want to kind of, I just want to get your scope on it. What the deal? What's your experience with it?
And sure.
Maybe that can instruct some people.
Sure. As far as for flavoring of things, chocolate has replaced carob over the years in the raw foods community. And the whole idea is that raw cacao is what raw chocolate is really called. And the whole idea is because it's raw, it's healthy. Just like I talked about earlier, there's two categories of food, raw and cooked. So chocolate that has negative effects on people, that actually kills a lot of animals, all of a sudden because it's raw, now it's good for you. And it's I wouldn't call it a half truth, it's maybe like a quarter truth or a fifth truth. If you have a regular chocolate bar, it's got pasteurized milk, it's got hydrogenated oil, it's got white sugar, it's got artificial flavorings, none of it's organic, it's got pesticide residues, it's absolute crap. I would consider that poisonous for the body. Mm-hmm. In addition, it's got caffeine and theobromine from the chocolate. And the chocolate's probably been heated up to a temperature that's not raw for sure. You then can move into, let's say, a whole food vegan chocolate bar, where you have organic cocoa butter, organic cacao, sweetened with some sort of organic, more whole food natural sugar, and no flavorings whatsoever. That is much healthier than a regular chocolate bar. When you move into a raw chocolate type product, you've got cacao and cacao butter, almost always of which are organic. The sweetener, instead of, let's say, a refined sugar or a less refined sugar in the vegan chocolate bar, is now something like agave nectar or yacone or lacuma, which are whole food sweeteners. Vastly healthier. And if there's vanilla in it, it's actually vanilla bean. Mm-hmm. If there's coconut in there, it's not coconut flavoring or coconut flakes, it's actual coconut. So the raw chocolate bar is much more whole foods. It's much more blood sugar balanced. It's everything in there is, for the most part, a healthy ingredient. But you still have the cacao in there. And cacao still has, it's either caffeine or theobromine or both in there. They're almost exactly the same chemicals. And caffeine is not good for you, whether it's in the form of yerba mate or cacao. Caffeine artificially increases your heart rate. It can give you heart palpitations. It artificially increases your respiration. If you take enough of it, you actually can die. You can induce death if you take enough of it because your heart won't be able to beat that fast. And I've seen it mess a lot of people's health up. If you take cacao before bed, you cannot sleep, period, because it's going to keep you awake. It's similar. We were also talking in the car. People take no-dos. They take caffeine to keep themselves up. Cacao is like a whole food version of that. I consider cacao a whole food medicinal recreational drug. And I don't think any evidence suggests anything otherwise than that. It's just it has this cachet. It has this thing that because it's raw, we can have it in any quantity and just pound it in. And I've seen people really mess up their health and their lives by following that advice. And I think it's actually reckless.
Yeah, and it's and you had mentioned in terms of antioxidants. I mean, it's good compared to some things.
It's up there. It's one of the higher higher-ish whole food type antioxidants. But when you compare it to lots of herbs like sage or oregano or rosemary, or even if you start to get into herbal extracts or some fruit and vegetable extracts like resveratrol from grapes, has about 40 times more antioxidants than cacao in it. Cacao is an okay antioxidant. If you're looking to take cacao to increase your antioxidant levels, it's a bad way to do it. Because cacao, because it increases your metabolism, in an artificial way, it makes your heart beat faster and creates actually adrenaline in your body. It actually uses up more antioxidants than it provides you. I use cacao what I call ceremonially. If I'm going to work out and I'm tired anyway, and I figure, you know, I'm not going to work out today at all, I will take a little bit of cacao or other things sometimes, or green tea or other things with caffeine, to just kind of kick myself in the ass and actually go out and do an hour or two workout. But just a little bit. If it's already late at night, my wife and I want to stay up and watch a movie, we'll have a little bit of cacao. But we use it very, very carefully.
Yeah.
Because you can really, its unbalanced power can easily be upset.
Yeah. Interesting. Let's talk about another staple in the raw food diet, which is namashoyu.
Mm-hmm.
Even tamari. And for those people who find raw tamari, let's talk about those.
Sure. If I can start with that by talking about salt in general.
Yeah, good.
There's the idea that some people think you should be on a completely low-sodium diet because so much research has shown that low-sodium diets lower blood pressure, it lowers your risk for kidney disease, for heart disease, and so forth. Now, that research is based on regular white table salt, which is heated anywhere from 300 to 1200 degrees. It has chemicals added to it. It has inorganic iodine added to it. And inorganic iodine is toxic and can kill you if you have enough of it. Regular table salt is absolutely abysmal for your health. And that should never be consumed unless you're dying of salt for someplace. Because that is so bad, some people have thrown the baby out with the bathwater and say, all salt is bad. And when you have no salt in your diet, or for example, let's talk about when you water fast. You have large amounts of water, mm-hmm. no salt in the water, and you think you'd be extremely hydrated. But when you water fast, you're actually slightly dehydrated. Because when you have too much salt from any source, you hold too much water in your body. There's too much water held in solution in your body. You become puffy and you retain fluids. If you have too little salt is what allows you to hold on to fluids. You can't hold on to enough fluids, and no matter how much water you drink. In fact, the more water you drink when you don't have enough salt, the more dehydrated you become, and the more work your kidneys have to do to maintain the salt you have in your system. So salt balance is essential. Now, you would think that on a natural diet, you should be able to get enough salt from salty vegetables like celery or tomatoes, and in some cases, I think that's accurate. But for anyone sweating or doing things athletic, or people who genetically have low blood pressure, or most people, in my experience, need to have additional sources of organic sodium. And if you look to animals in nature, whenever there is a salt lick around, the animals flock to it and start consuming that salt lick. Even animals in nature, you even find predator and prey near each other mm-hmm. at salt licks, licking the salt, because the prey is so drawn to that salt that they're risk getting eaten by a predator just so they can have that salt. There's something very valuable about it. The best form of salt, in my opinion, by far in any community, is miso. Because miso used to be considered cooked, which was completely wrong, because miso starts out cooked, but it's aged for 2 years. Usually it's in wooden casks like they used to do in the old days, and it's treated with probiotics and enzymes, and by the time miso comes out, every square molecule of that miso has undergone enzymatic and probiotic action, and miso actually has a huge life force field around it. It's anti-cancer, it's anti-radiation, it's a tremendous antioxidant, it's a tremendous healing food, and only a small part of it is salt. to me, it's the number one. I actually consider miso a superfood, a hardcore superfood, up there with any other superfood, and it compares statistically and with research. And it's a live, living salt. The next salt, the next things you would go to, I think, would be a shoyu type or tamari soy sauce. And the years ago, there was a mistake in the raw food community in that someone thought or was led to believe that nama shoyu was raw soy sauce and tamari was not. People said tamari is poisonous crap, it's cooked, and nama shoyu is the way to go. And let me tell you the truth on that. I've done a lot of research on this. Tamari is the world's original soy sauce, made in Japan back to recorded records. Mm-hmm. Miso was made, and the liquid that floated to the top of the miso was tamari. That was what was tamari. It was aged. It was fermented in a good way with bacteria and enzymes. Hmm. And no wheat was ever added to this. There was no such thing as wheat in Asia. And today, tamari is made on its own, and it's fermented on its own. Nama shoyu is a very recent, thousands and thousands of years, there was tamari. And the ingredients are soybeans, water, and salt, enzymes, and probiotics that treat this. Nama shoyu is made differently, whereas today they add westernized wheat to nama shoyu. The wheat, actually, when it ferments, forms a large amount of alcohol. So it has a less full-bodied flavor than tamari, and it has a larger alcohol content, which isn't necessarily a problem, but there's less flavor to it. And since it has wheat in it, people with wheat allergies and people with gluten intolerance, which is a big percentage of the population, cannot consume it. Hmm. And tamari, unless someone actually went out of their way to pasteurize it, is not cooked. Tamari is raw. Right. So is nama shoyu. They're equally as raw, but tamari is made the traditional, healthier way. It has a stronger, better flavor than nama shoyu, and it's completely gluten-free. Nama shoyu has destroyed, I mean absolutely wreaked havoc, destroyed raw food cuisine for anyone who is wheat sensitive or anyone who has celiac disease, which means they can't have any gluten whatsoever. It's just eliminated that for them. Yeah. And it's less healthy than tamari. There's no reason we need to be having wheat in your tamari, in your soy sauce. So to me, nama shoyu's time has come due to an error of someone thinking it was raw and tamari was not, and it's now time for it to go. It has no place in the raw food community, I don't think, whatsoever, because we have superior alternatives, and that would be gluten-free tamari.
Hmm. And so that liquid that's coming up,
yes.
It's coming up for both. I mean, it's the same liquid. Tamari and nama shoyu is the same. Well, not nama shoyu, but tamari and tamari. But then you add wheat to...
Somewhat. The only liquid that ever rose to the top was the tamari.
Okay.
That was liquid, because now... It's tamari is not made in conjunction with miso. It's made in fermentation casks on its own.
Okay.
And so is nama shoyu. Nama shoyu didn't exist back in the old days.
Okay.
But it's very exactly the same process. One has wheat to it. One does not.
Then what's the then why how would they both be, why would they be different in terms of raw?
They
or
wouldn't,
not?
And they're
okay.
not. It was All a right. complete error.
Yeah.
You can probably find at a regular Asian market, like a junk food Asian market, like a regular American grocery store, a tamari that's been pasteurized, that has preservatives in it, and a bunch of other absolute horrible things for you, and someone must have said, therefore, it's all pasteurized. You can pasteurize nama shoyu, too, and you can get pasteurized nama shoyu.
Right.
So, but there isn't a difference. And
right.
I'm not even Asian, but if I were Asian, I'd be really irritated at nama shoyu because, hey, listen, for thousands of years we were making kick-ass soy sauce, and all of a sudden we have this Western wheat coming into our diet that's in this soy sauce making alcohol in it. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I'd never heard that explanation.
And my wife has celiac. She can't handle any gluten at all, so we go to raw food restaurants and stuff, and she can hardly eat anything.
Yeah, you get salad.
It's hard enough to be vegan, and then you're into raw foods, and then we go places like, God, I can't eat anything here. Everything has nama shoyu in it.
Yeah.
And now I can, but why? Why? Why not just upgrade our health?
Yeah, and then switch to tamari.
Yes.
Interesting.
Nama shoyu sounds cooler. Maybe that's one of the reasons, you know. Nama shoyu.
Let's talk. You are an incredible formulator of products. And before we even talk about some of the things that you really find and that you search out for and you add to your products for just awesome products and health. I want to talk about your process of procuring the raw ingredients and how you do that and what are the standards that you hold up.
Sure. Procuring raw ingredients is very important to make sure that the quality is there. And you have to start with good quality raw materials to have a good quality product at the end. I've actually come up with a new standard that I do that by, and it's called Truganic, different than organic. And the reason I came up with this is because in seeking organic certification for many of the superfoods that I have, I ran into some problems because probiotics cannot be certified organic, even if you grow them organically. It's not on the USDA's list of organic approved items. Enzymes are not considered organic, even if they're grown organically. You can't legally state they're organic. If you have wildcrafted things, like nettles, for example, which is the best when it's wildcrafted, it's plentiful wildcrafted, it grows the best, and it's the most nutritious when it's wildcrafted, no pesticides ever used. I mean, it grows in the middle of nowhere, it's a weed, and nobody touches it. And Mother Nature waters it, no pesticides anywhere. That is not, you can't say certified organic. Spirulina. To have certified organic spirulina, I have only two choices. One, I need to get it from China. And the quality actually is good from the Chinese spirulina, but nobody likes things from China. Mm-hmm. Or I can get it from India. And the certified organic Indian spirulina smells like dung. The ones that I've had to this date, it actually smells like dung. And it doesn't make me comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I'm not comfortable getting either one of those. Now, spirulina has always been grown organically. Always. But to grow spirulina organically, the USDA came up with rules. And in the past, they said, listen, spirulina, they determined that spirulina, they said, we're going to treat spirulina like a head of livestock. So even though spirulina eats rock dust and minerals in a lake in nature, they said, you can't feed spirulina rock dust minerals when you grow it. You have to feed it organic sources of minerals, meaning you have to start feeding it high mineral foods, like you have to start feeding it some decaying plants. You can't just put phosphorus, elemental phosphoric acid, into the spirulina, which it needs to grow, which is in lakes. You have to come up with an organic, something that's gone through a plant or an animal to feed it. So what spirulina used to be fed, organic spirulina, for its phosphorus, was bat guano, which is bat feces, because they had to have some sort of organic source. For sulfur and some other things, what was used was fermented animal bones to put in the spirulina. Now, this was a more expensive process, and it provided a less nutritious spirulina, but you were able to call it certified organic.
Yikes.
And the USDA also said that we need you to have smaller ponds for spirulina, smaller spirulina ponds, because we think you could be dumping in pesticides at one end of this big pool, and we wouldn't test it at the other end. So these ridiculous rules, and it was a more expensive and less nutritious process. Now, there was two companies that did that, and in 2005, they both said, you know what, we are done with this organic spirulina because the government is too difficult and we're growing inferior spirulina at greatly accelerated costs and we're not interested in doing that. The spirulina we've been growing is always organic. Now, there's something crazy about that, where in nature, spirulina, there's phosphoric acid in a lake. Only lakes with naturally occurring high phosphorus can grow spirulina, but you can't add that material. You can't mine that from the lake and add it to your pond to grow spirulina. It's no longer organic.
Right.
Which is ridiculous to me. Now, there's a few companies now that are actually growing it vegan, the ones I talked about, by using plant extracts and so forth, but you don't get as nutritious of a spirulina because spirulina doesn't want a chickpea mash for its source of nitrogen. It wants actual nitrogen. It wants all these actual elements because it wants inorganic minerals just like plants do that converts them into organic minerals. So the spirulina that I'm using is much better quality than the certified organic ones. It is organic, but I can't say it. But between the spirulina, the nettles, and the other things, in products I have, it's more than 30% wildcrafted or not certifiable materials.
Okay.
Therefore, I can't even say organic on the label.
That's right, because it's 70%.
Correct. And I thought, well, you know, it looks like this other product's organic, and it's inferior. My product is organic. It has no pesticides. It is not GMO. It's not irradiated, and I have the test to prove it. So I'm tired of fighting with the government and the state of California about how to call that.
Yeah.
So I came up with a completely new standard called Truganic. And Truganic is a standard beyond organic. It's a hardcore purist standard significantly beyond organic, in that no pesticides can be used anywhere in the growing process. But one difference there is every batch of something that has Truganic on it actually has to have a test showing that no pesticide drift, nothing happened between growing and when it got processed, that there's no pesticides in it whatsoever. It also has to have a test for irradiation and presence of genetically modified organisms. Now, irradiation, for the most part, is banned with organic materials. However, I have gotten some organic materials that were irradiated, either because it got slipped in, or because in the case of Dulce one time, I was sending products overseas and they were testing it for radiation, and it came back and said, your product is irradiated. We're sending your whole pallets of stuff back on a boat and you're going to pay for it. I thought, what in God's name is going on? Mm-hmm. So I took every single ingredient in that product, had it tested for irradiation, and found that the Dulce came up with mild irradiation. Now, sometimes seaweeds can show that they're irradiated because they're so high mineral and so high energy, the machines get confused. That's a known phenomenon. But I called up the supplier of this Dulce to Harvard and said, wait a minute, we got this test, what's going on? And they said, well, actually, we did irradiate that very slightly. It's below the tolerance. It was legal to do. It only has a certain level. And we did that. And I thought, wait, and I found out that you could irradiate something slightly that was organic. I said, well, that's not right. Wow. But in Europe, they have stricter standards, and they said, send it back to America.
Wow.
Now, Truganic can't be irradiated whatsoever, and you have to have a test to prove it. And also for organic, because the U.S. government made the standards for organic. They took comment and so forth. And you can use processing agents that are toxic in organic on your machinery. And actually in the product, you can put things that are toxic in your organic products. Certain chemicals and other additives you can use in small amounts, as long as you fill out a log to say that you used it. You can also use regular pest control to get rid of be it termites or cockroaches or rodents in your warehouse, in your production facility. You can spray chemicals as long as you close up your bags tight and fill out a log that says you tried alternative methods. With Truganic, you can't do any of that, and it's completely unnecessary. And the way I control animals from coming in is I have these ultrasonic pest raiders. It makes this noise. You don't want dogs or cats or other things near it. And it prevents animals from coming in. And you can spray peppermint oil and other essential oils around your warehouse, around the perimeter. They hate the smell of it and then go away. Mm-hmm. It's not necessary to use traditional pest control. You don't need to use toxic agents to clean your floor as long as you close your bags up, because it's in the air and evaporates and it gets on all the machinery. So for that reason, I came up with the standard of Truganic. And it's a new standard that I did define the rules on, but other companies are going to be coming on board and establishing it too. And it's kind of like organic is a good standard for the average person, but it's not the same organic that it was 15, 20 years ago. Truganic is really the true organic.
Let's talk about some of your favorite superfoods, your favorite herbs, your favorite just powders, whatever.
Sure. I want to start with spirulina. Uh-huh. To me, if you had to just have one superfood, spirulina is the single number one superfood you could possibly take. You don't have to just have one, but that is the number one. It's a blue-green algae grown. It's been used around the world. The Aztecs use it. The Incas used it. People in Africa use it today. It grows naturally in their lakes. the Aztecs gave it to the runners for strength and endurance when they went on long runs delivering a message from one town to another. It's loaded with B vitamins. It's unbelievably high in chlorophyll, about 50 to 60% protein, a complete protein. But the difference between an animal protein and a vegetable protein is animal proteins form large amounts of uric acid. Uric acid is hard on the kidney, contributes to kidney stones, arthritis, gout, and osteoporosis, and acidity in general. Vegetable proteins contribute very little uric acid to the body and don't cause kidney stress. Spirulina is magnificent because it's very high protein, but it also has something that's unique to blue-green algae. It's called phycocyanin. And that's a pigment that has been shown to both prevent and reverse kidney damage. So if you've had kidney damage from any source, including high animal protein products, it's ironic that taking another high-protein product is going to help you get out of that, and spirulina will absolutely do that. Spirulina is an unbelievable immune stimulant. When I say stimulant, it's not a stimulant like caffeine or cacao that we talked about earlier. It's an immune supporter. And it's probably one of the best things you can do to support the immune system. T cells, B cells, macrophages, they all act better when you're taking spirulina. Extracts of spirulina have been shown to inhibit HIV virus. Hmm. Tobacco smokers, when they're smoking tobacco and taking spirulina, have a better resistance to lung cancer. Hmm. Spirulina also contributes to making metabolic enzymes, metabolic antioxidant enzymes in your body, and it's very powerful to do that. It's anti-allergy. There's so many things that spirulina does that's absolutely phenomenal. That's why I consider it the world's number one superfood if you just had to have one.
Wow.
It's also ultra green as far as the environment, because it takes such a small amount of space to grow such a huge amount of spirulina. It's very eco. And there's something I want to clear up about blue-green algae. Klamath algae is also a blue-green algae, grows in Klamath Lake, Oregon. Awesome species of algae. It's a blue-green algae like spirulina. And because in the late 80s and early 90s, there was a Klamath proponent who was then very prominent, who unfairly bashed spirulina, also somewhat prominent in the raw foods community. I don't even if this person even knew that all spirulina was cooked and heat-treated and so forth and was contaminated, which was the case back in the 70s when it was grown in Mexico City, which it's not anymore.
Right.
That got the idea in the raw foods community got that, okay, Klamath algae is up here and spirulina is here, and I believed that at one point too, and I got a lot of benefit from Klamath algae. But spirulina is grown optimally. It's grown in under optimum conditions, dried at low temperatures, and completely enzyme active. Spirulina and Klamath algae are both awesome species of blue-green algae. Another reason sometimes people think Klamath algae is better is because it costs considerably more than spirulina to buy. Therefore, it must be better. And they both rock and kick ass. Nutrient per dollar, spirulina is better because you can afford to take 5-6 times more of it.
Right, per dollar.
Yes, I take a lot of spirulina. I do also take Klamath algae, too, because it's also a rockin' species of algae.
Yeah, that's cool. What else?
Chlorella is another algae, similar to spirulina and chlorella, but chlorella is just a green algae. There's no blue pigment in it. And as a result, every time you... It's almost an advantage that there's no phycocyanin in the chlorella, because as a result, you get more chlorophyll. Chlorella is probably the highest known source of chlorophyll in the world. Chlorella is also loaded with vitamins and minerals. It's about 10 times higher in zinc than pumpkin seeds, for example, and pumpkin seeds are very high in zinc. Chlorella has a cell wall. It actually has a cell wall that has to be broken to be absorbable, but chlorella's cell wall is an advantage because it has a tremendous affinity to chelate out poisons from your body. Radioactive elements, mercury, other toxins, chlorella is phenomenal for chelating those things out of your body, and it's really awesome for detox. Another super high chlorophyll food is nettles. And nettles, I actually... are much more nutritious than grasses. And I love grasses. Grasses are super alkaline. They're super nutritious. They're just wonderful. They're fresh. They're growing. They're totally awesome. But grasses have maybe 10, 12% minerals. Nettles has about 18 to 20% minerals. It's much more mineral rich. It's much higher in chlorophyll than grasses. And the first time I ever had fresh nettles, I was in someone's yard and I was looking at their garden. And their garden was kind of unkempt looking, which I think is kind of a cool look. And I said, "Wow, do you know what you have growing in your garden?" I said, "You have nettles." He goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, we haven't cared for our garden and tended." I'm like, "No, that looks great." I said, "Can I go get some? Can I have some?" They said, "Sure." And they got me out some gloves and some bags. I said, "No, I just want to pick it because nettles is known as stinging nettles. It does sting." And I was so excited about seeing fresh nettles that I just went out there and picked it right with my hands and my arms, and I got all red and so forth. It was really stinging, but I was just so charged up. It turned me on more. The more it stung me, I'm like, nettles, oh my God, this fresh-growing, incredible gift from the gods. And I'd only had it dried prior to that.
Right.
And I did then put it in a plastic bag to take it home, and after a while I thought, wow, I kind of hurt.
Yeah.
Took it home, juiced it in my Twin Gear juicer, rinsed it off, and I pulled the root out and everything. When I drank probably 16, 20 ounces of this nettle, fresh nettle juice, it was an amazing rush to my body. It was just like manna and prana had chi had come into my body. I'm a big wheatgrass drinker over the years. This was 5 times more powerful than wheatgrass. It was taken to a whole new level. I'm like, wow, this is just amazing stuff. Right. And nettles is loaded. It's loaded with silica. It's loaded with vitamin C. It is loaded with, God, there's something else. It was the silica I was going to talk about. Loaded with vitamins, loaded with minerals, very cleansing, very phenomenal for you. It's one of my favorite superfoods, and it tends to grow wild. There's tremendous amounts of wild-crafted nettles.
Yeah, and where they're found in, like, northeast area or around the country? Where, in the U.S., at least.
I didn't discover them until I moved to California, so it might be in the
northeast, really?
But there's plenty in California.
Huh.
There's plenty in the hills where I live. There's tons of nettles in the spring. It's nettle season.
Wow.
And there's actually an old wives' tale that if you whop yourself with the nettles and areas of pain, it'll help you to heal those areas. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a wives' tale. When you do, if you have a pain somewhere and you hit yourself with the nettles, it actually does, you get a little bit, you get stung there, and it kind of makes it red. But what happens is a massive amount of blood rushes to that area. The circulation that comes to that area is immense, and it actually can help you heal. Now, when you dry nettles or you juice it, that stinging property completely goes away, so it's completely safe to consume.
Yeah. So what else I mean, there's so many things that you have in some of your products, and there's so many specific things that you have just as products. I mean, what goes through your head when you're saying, all right, time to think of something new, or this isn't the best. You know, how can I make this better?
I have a good answer for that. And in the traditional medicine, people are sick, and I actually feel sorry for people that are just stuck in the traditional medical model because their quality of life is lowered, and they have their spouses or themselves or their children or their parents die of diseases that the medical profession thinks incurable. I honestly, truly feel sorry for people that can't get out of that box. And people that get into holistic and alternative things, oftentimes they heal. Sometimes they don't. And I've seen people spend lots of money and lots of effort sometimes on a holistic alternative healing and have it not work. And that's always bothered me. And sometimes it's because what they're taking, the supplements or superfoods or things they have access to, aren't good enough. And over the years, I've come to understand that the quality and affordability of a nutritional product can and often does mean the difference between lethargy and energy, sickness and death, and literally, sickness and health, and literally life and death. And I don't want people to be tired, sick, or dead because they couldn't afford or obtain a high-quality enough nutritional product. And that's what's going through my head when I develop products. What could I possibly do? What could I change? What kind of ratio in here? What superfood is better in here that I could make someone who has an incurable disease not die of it? That's what I think of.
And how do you test for quality? I mean, how does that work?
You want to make sure that your product is clean. It's not contaminated with harmful microbes. You can also test for chlorophyll, for various vitamins, for various minerals, for other things. You can also visually see something. If something's supposed to be dark green and it's pale, you don't want that. Various those other tests, both visual and analytical, to determine if things are quality enough and they meet standards. And I have certain standards that I've come to expect from certain products. And there's a lot of different grades of products. For example, there's a capsule grade of products, which means it's very, very chunky because it's hard to encapsulate fine powders. But a chunky herb that's like cut and sifted, more like a tea, When you consume that, if you can see the particles in your hand pretty easily, you're only going to access the outside cut of those cells. For example, one little particle that you can see in your hand might be 100,000 cells of that vegetable. Mm-hmm. And there's cuts on the outside where it got cut and ground up. You can only get at the cells on the cut side, one cell deep. So if there's 100,000 cells there, there's probably 99,000 that you can't get at. Your probiotics make a little bit of cellulation in your body, but not much. You're maybe going to get 90,000 of them, and the rest is going to pass through a hole. Things have to be micropulverized and ground up so every single cell wall is broken so you can actually utilize them. Or you need to boil them into a tea and cook them to extract it that way. But in trying to do things fresh and raw, which there's a benefit to, you need to grind it up.
Yeah. And so what's the balance between superfoods and herbs and then, fresh fruits and vegetables?
To me, superfoods and herbs are the second most important thing you could possibly put in your body. The first being fruits, vegetables, juices, nuts, seeds, things of that nature, legumes, other actual foods. Because unless you're just going to live on dried superfoods, they're not as important as the actual food you eat. And in fact, if you can get, if I have nettles in front of me that I can juice, I'm not going to bother taking dried nettles.
Yeah.
But very few people ever have fresh nettles that they can juice. And when I make superfoods, I try to make things that people can't actually access and eat. I'm not going to dry avocado and put it in a superfood because people can eat avocados. I'm not going to dry, common foods and put them in a superfood because you can eat those. I want to dry the things like spirulina and chlorella and dulsin kelp that people can't consume.
Right.
And dulsin kelp I'd like to talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
Seaweeds are phenomenal. Kelp, for example, is the most nutritious food I think you can possibly consume, the highest known minerals of any plant, even when you remove the sodium from it. Kelp is also very high, as a lot of sea vegetables are, in organic iodine. And iodine is essential for cancer prevention and for the thyroid, for metabolism, for functioning well, for so many different things. Now, iodine in isolation, isolated iodine, like what they use for salt, what they iodize salt with, is downright toxic. It's also known as rat poison. It used to be sold in drugstores or actually hardware stores with a skull and crossbones on it. If you take enough, you'll die. It'll kill you.
Wow.
There's no known toxicity of iodine in the form of a whole food, meaning a whole vegetable food. Like kelp or dulse, you can't overdose it and get a toxicity of iodine because Mother Nature built in complexes around that whole food that don't allow it to be toxic. The same thing is with iron. Iron is high in spirulina, chlorella, lots of other nettles, lots of other whole foods. And from an animal source or from a supplement, it used to bother me. I used to get in discussions with people about vegan, not vegan. I've been a vegan for 22 years, so you get in discussions with the people. Some are spirited and healthy, others are antagonistic. Oh, you're a vegan? Yeah, well, blah, blah, blah. And one of the things that people would talk about is they'd say, hey, iron from an animal product or from a supplement is more absorbable than iron from a plant. What do you think of that? And I wouldn't always have the best explanations for them other than telling them I take my blood at least once a year and my iron levels are sufficient. They'd point at someone that was anemic who was a vegetarian. Now, there's two things on that. One is dairy products block iron absorption. If you're a vegetarian, you're much more likely to be iron deficient than if you're a vegan because you're not doing dairy. Vegetarian is kind of old school. Just people should just go vegan. Now, there's also a huge toxicity from iron from an animal product or from a supplement, and it's clearly linked and associated with heart disease, having heart attacks and dying of them, excess iron in the tissues. Iron is the opposite of an antioxidant. It's an oxidant. It creates free radical damage. Now, iron from spirulina, from kale, from nettles, from chlorella, has no toxicity at any level of usage. You can't overdose it. It's impossible. There is no toxicity. And I'm not talking about extracted and isolated from those foods. I'm talking about in the foods. And I found out subsequently that when you're deficient in iron, the iron from the plant sources is more absorbable. But when you have enough iron, it becomes less absorbable. Because in a plant food, your body can selectively absorb that iron. Mm-hmm. It's built in nature so we don't kill ourselves, so we don't hurt ourselves. And that's another benefit of taking superfoods and not taking isolated supplements, is you're mostly protected from those issues.
Right. Where did you learn this from? Do you have mentors? Or?
I have some mentors that I've learned various things from, but most of the things in superfoods and supplements and herbs I've learned from my own research and on myself and others and doing other work.
Yeah.
And just doing it for a long time and being really into them. To me, superfoods and herbs are God's and Mother Nature's gift to us. I think that, you know, Mother Nature put all the healing substances we need on Earth for us, and it's been my my passion and my honor to be able to assemble those over the last many years for people to help them heal, and it's kind of like magic elixirs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very exciting.
Yeah. Let's talk about one or two more. We only have a couple more minutes, but let's talk about one or two more superfoods.
Something else I want to talk about is roots. Roots are phenomenally healing. They're completely different than greens. And I've actually got a product called Earth that is mostly roots and barks and so forth, because greens are one end of the spectrum, roots are the other end of the spectrum. They're more grounding. Things like astragalus root are phenomenal for the immune system, anti-cancer. Burdock root is part of the famous ESSIAC anti-cancer formula, and it does have certain properties in there. And roots are, it's just kind of part of the whole food. They're a phenomenal way to get a lot of healing energy. They really have a large effect on hormone balancing. One of those is maca. Maca is a phenomenal root used in Peru for thousands of years. Although maca is also a cruciferous vegetable, and cruciferous vegetables raw are very hard to tolerate. I have a maca product now that has a maca in it that has the strength of an extract, but it's not an extract. It's a whole maca. It has all the vitamins and minerals associated with it, because maca extracts, you can actually start to have hormonal imbalances from, because sometimes they're extracted too much and leave too much of the whole food out that there's no longer balance. Whereas maca in and of itself is amazing for hormone balance for men or women, because it just has hormone precursors in it. It's amazing for fertility in both men and women, strength, endurance, stamina, for so many things. To this maca, I've added enzymes, probiotics, herbs, and a huge amount of energetics, so you can actually access all the nutrients of the maca and have no digestive issues that you would otherwise with a raw cruciferous vegetable.
Hmm. What do you mean by energetics?
Energetics are things like magnets. There's a whole magnetic protocol that I use to both purify any harmful microbes in a product, and also then to energize it, actually give it a slight magnetic charge. There's other things. For example, people might be familiar with tachyon silica discs or other things like that. There's a whole energetic and vibrational process I go through when making products to amp them up as much as absolutely possible. And just recently, I started making homeopathics from products, mixing up the product, making them homeopathic, and then taking that homeopathic and adding it back to the product to further energize and amp up the product to its maximum possible potential.
So it's like a one-up.
And I've got a couple stage process. Yeah. There's always a new way to do that, and I'm always evolving that process.
It's creative. It's great. What would you like to leave someone with in this interview? Like, we have about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
Like, what could you leave someone with? Kind of a, if they came to you, say it was a family member, say mm-hmm. it was someone said, hey, I need to know something. What would it be? It doesn't need to be about raw food either, but
okay.
What would you tell them?
I'll keep it to health. I would say, listen, you can have a much better quality of life if you become a vegan, a whole food vegan, organic, get rid of the toxic products in your house, get non-toxic cleaning products, personal care products, and so forth. If you eat about 80% raw foods, start doing at least 16 ounces, if not a half a gallon of juice a day, eat high water content raw foods, and add some superfoods to your diet. I have a few. They're my two flagship products. One's called Vitamiral Green, the other is called Earth. Mm-hmm. If you just do those things, just add those two superfoods to your diet, become a whole food vegan with a lot of raw foods, dramatic difference in your health and in your quality of life. And sometimes people say, wow, isn't it a burden? Isn't it a pain in the ass to be so narrow and so focused on things? I thought, no, it's magnificent to be, because I get to be healthier in my everyday life. I get to think better and feel better and hang out with more conscious people. And it's ironic that I was doing this when I was in high school, and all my friends thought I was a freak. They said, you're never going to get married. And if you do get married to anybody, you're going to marry some weird hippie girl that's all strange and just flaky and a freak. And I went back to my five-year high school reunion many, many years ago, and I brought my wife with me, who just happened to be drop-dead gorgeous, and she was like a normal human being, and she was conscious, and she was sane. And I met her at a raw foods convention.
Uh-huh.
So because I was a crazy freak, I got the best wife of any of them. So I think it makes your life better to be health conscious. And someone says, well, it's inconvenient to juice or inconvenient to eat that way. Well, being sick is really inconvenient personally, and it's inconvenient financially too, because you got to take off work. And getting degenerative diseases later in life, that's really inconvenient. So I'm really happy and gracious to the lifestyle that I've been exposed to and continue to live.
Yeah. And how important is exercise in the whole scheme?
I talked about that yesterday in a lecture.
Uh-huh.
Exercise is absolutely vital to being healthy. Some people sometimes when they eat raw, they say, I just eat raw, I'm doing everything right, I don't need to exercise. Exercise is a critical part of health. I would rather eat 50% healthy, vegan whole food, mostly raw, and 50% kind of processed vegan food, and have an optimal exercise program than exercise a little bit and eat 100% raw. If I had to make that choice, I would do that because it's so dramatically impactful.
I want to thank you for this interview. I really, really enjoy your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this Rockathon interview. There are 14 others that are just as personal and just as powerful. So please go ahead and keep listening. If you're listening to this and haven't purchased the Rockathon archives yet, you can do so at www.rockathon.com. That's www.rawkathon.com. Again, thanks for listening and have an amazing day.